Well, welcome everyone. This is, I think, presentation number 6 with one of my good and dear friends, Stevie Bell. And this is the Insider's Guide to Peru, and I'm Renee Barbo, the Practical Shaman. And I actually have some good news today to report myself. According to rumor has it that the book that I'm going to be in with Jack Canfield is arriving at my doorstep today. So if you want to get your early signed copy, go to thepracticalshaman.com and you can order it up, and I will be happy to sign it and send it over your way. I'm really excited about this. It's not my full book, but my chapter called Creativity, A Recipe for Awakening is in there, and I'm really thrilled. Today, we've been going through, I sent out links today for the talk from Linda Fitch, and I sent it with Jamie's, and I sent out Jorge Luis Delgado, in case you missed that, and Elizabeth Jenkins. And so make sure you get a chance to download those. You'll be able to do that for about a month. So, you know, get them on your computer and save them. And next week, we're looking forward to having Rosario Saria, who is from Lima, and she's a medicine woman who practices with Maria Teresa Valenzuela, and that's who I'll be doing a week of medicine work with in Mexico in May. I'm looking forward to having them both. Rosario speaks somewhat quasi-perfect English, so Maria Teresa will be there to translate. And then our final week is going to be Bonnie Glass Coffin, who's a professor of anthropology in Utah, and she is going to be representing Oscar Moreau Quesada's group. And so we've had a really, really well-rounded approach here to this Insider's Guide to Peru, and I'm looking forward to finding out a little bit more about Lima and the north of Peru next week, in the weeks to come. So let's get on to Stevie. As I said, she's a dear friend, and she's an internationally known teacher in the areas of energy work and formerly a lot of glass. I'm fortunate to have one of her pendulums, and she has been on a healing path for more than 30 years. Stevie, if you know Stevie, she's a consummate healer, and she's always striving to learn more and learn new techniques about how to master her craft. It's one of the things that I really admire about her. And today she's going to be here to talk to us about the practices of the despacho. And for those of you who have been to Peru, you've seen them, you know, all over the place. People are talking about that they'll give you do a despacho for you. And if you've been to the markets, you see that there's actual stores for despachos. So I'm really excited today to be offering the vehicle for Stevie to share her information about despacho. I think she'll tell you a little bit later in the call that she's going to be offering a class on despachos. And Stevie also runs the Shaman Store. So if you want to find out more about Stevie, it's www.shamanstore.com. Is that correct?
Yep.
All right.
Two S's in the middle.
Two S's in the middle, yes. It's saved in my computer because I go there frequently. So, Stevie, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Renee. Thank you so much for, you know, creating this opportunity and for being the not only practical shaman, but the shaman of the waves and the wires and Facebook and networking. You do a fabulous job.
Thank you. We have over 300 people registered for this call.
Cool.
I know. It's the biggest one yet.
A tribute to your fabulous networking abilities.
And due diligence, I must say.
Right. That too. Got to do the work, right?
That's true. So welcome, Stevie. We're looking forward to hearing what you have to share.
Cool. So where would you like me to start? I mean, you know, we can start with the history. We can start with what despacho means.
I think it would be good to tell people, a lot of times when you say the word despacho, they think you're talking about gazpacho.
Right, the soup. And that's your territory, not mine.
Right. So I told people at the Shaman Chef today that I would be happy to share my gazpacho recipe, but you are going to share about despacho. So maybe you want to start by telling the people who have never been to Peru, who know nothing, what is a despacho?
Well, first of all, you know, one of the things that we have to realize is that the Incas were, of course, as we all know, conquered by the Spanish. So in the weaving of much of this tradition, we'll find the influence of the Spanish. And in this particular case, we have the word despacho, which is actually Spanish, not Quechua or Aymara or any of the other languages that are spoken in the Andean cultures of Peru and Ecuador. And so it's really important to understand that despacho, really what it means, it's a beautiful description of the ceremony, because what it means is to dispatch. So we're talking about dispatching our prayers. The despacho in the Quechua language is actually really interesting because it, and I won't say that I have the pronunciation of this just perfect, but it's highway, which is actually J-A-I-W-A-Y. And it's interesting because in our language, that almost sounds like highway, which again would be the vehicle and the pathway for the prayers to get to spirit and to all of the spirits of nature and all of the things. We'll talk about what, you know, many of the representations are. But they use this ceremony, the despacho ceremony, as a means of harmonizing with nature, of engaging ourselves with the sacred Aini, which in this tradition means reciprocity, and really it's really bringing ourselves into alignment with the energies of the universe and really a place of reverence and thanksgiving. You know, a despacho is an act of love. It's a reminder of connections that we share with all beings, all elements, all spirits, all sacred places. In Peru, those are called huacas. And at the deepest level, giving us an opportunity to really enter into unity with all things.
And yesterday people heard from Linda talking about the mountains and connecting in gratitude to the mountains. So is the despacho maybe a way that people would get to know their mountain a little better, or how does that work?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the things about despachos is there's conflicting stories about how many types of despachos, but, you know, I've always heard 200 to 300 different types. There are main ones, though, and one of the main ones is actually an apu, or a mountain despacho. And the mountain despacho is actually a despacho that is done in reverence and to connect with your sacred mountains. So, you know, in some of the traditions, what we do is for those who have studied Peruvian shamanism, you know, we talk about going to our Itu Apu to connect with our mountain of birth. So an Itu Apu is actually your birth mountain. What was the mountain that was closest to you when you were born? And so you do a despacho to that mountain to thank it for holding space for you. When I was in Peru, one of the last trips I made, I actually did a mountain despacho with one of the pacos there, and it was really phenomenal. And one of the things he said after we got done with that apu despacho was, now you need to go connect with the apus that mean the most to you in your land. So I actually went to one of the mountains that really is significant for me is Mount Shasta in California, and I actually went and did an apu despacho at Mount Shasta and actually climbed up onto a mountain where I could see Mount Shasta because there was still snow on the mountains, and actually left that despacho there where I could actually connect my energy to the mountain. So anytime when you're talking about, we talk about having our sacred mountains in other countries or lands, for instance, Peru, and those are important. You can definitely do a mountain despacho to Apuasangate, Apu Salkantay, Machu Picchu, Huanapichu, Illimane, whatever the mountain is that you're most connected with, but you can do it to any mountain. And what you want to do is you really want, once you've done that apu despacho and you've really said your prayers to connection for protection, for wisdom, because the mountains are really known for being the places where the wisdom of the ancients are held. So the top of the mountain is the place where the spirits of our past ancestors and shamans and pacos have more or less landed to, and that's where the wisdom is held. So, yes, the Apu Despacho is an amazing despacho, and you can do it for, you also can do in the Apu Despacho for the mountain that holds your energy now, so the current mountain where you live. So for me, it would be the Wasatch Mountains here in Utah. And so you can do them to those as well. And you do want to do that because you do want to honor that they hold space for you and engage with them and engage with the wisdom that's held there.
Stevie, I sent a picture this morning in the newsletter, and I don't know if everyone got a chance to see it or not. But for somebody who doesn't know, I mean, it looks a little foreign there. What are those ingredients, and do they symbolize something, or what? If I was to, I don't know what a despacho is. I've never been to Peru, but I want to honor my mountains. So talk to me about a little bit about what goes into this prayer bundle.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and you know, that's a really great question, Renee, because what I do when I'm teaching a class is I actually give recipes that I've learned over the years of working with the Pacos in Peru and with some of my wonderful mentors that I've had that have shared their wisdom with me, Jose Luis Herrera, Cindy Lindsay, you know, Four Winds, all of that. So I brought that together in a place where I do actually have recipes where you can actually look at the ingredients and actually see what they are. But here's what I have to say about that. You know, and this is what the Peruvians and all of the people of the Andes say as well, is that the recipes are merely a suggestion. They are a guide. They do represent all of the energies, the energies of the earth, the energies of the sky, the directions. They represent the land and the harvest and all of the spirits, the mountains. I mean, they represent amazing different the qualities and the characteristics and that we're engaging with, which is this whole piece about engaging with everything as though it is one. And so it's really all of the ingredients have specific meanings. And when I do the class, I clearly define all of those. And if anyone has a specific question about a specific ingredient, I'm happy to answer that. But the main thing is, and this is what everyone says, is that it's really about our intention. So some of the simplest ingredients in a despacho are, you know, just the fact that we bring in our intention. We bring in the elements maybe that we have available at that moment. The original despachos, interestingly enough, the original despachos weren't done in the way that we do them now. We do them such that we put down a foundation. We put down a piece of paper. We put in a shell, which represents the mama cochas, the waters, the lakes, all of those energies. And when we do that, we start building that. But originally, the way they were done was they were just done in what people had. So if they had a shell, if they had a piece of bark from a tree, they would lay those ingredients on there and they would maybe release it into a body of water. They were very, very simple. They might put a wairuru seed in for good luck or for protection, which is the black and red seed that we see that comes from Peru often. So the ingredients, although they are important, and it's really beautiful to do a full ceremony. So like, for instance, the one that you sent out was actually a picture of a Pachamama despacho. And in the center were two figures that represent the masculine and the feminine, or the Yanantin and the Macentin. And so there was a shell, which again represents the waters, the Mama Cocha. There was leaves there, which represent our prayers are usually put into Kintus, which are could be any number of leaves, but in most cases, most kintus are three leaves that you literally blow your prayers into. Those are there. There's incense for good smells. There is, you know, alphabet noodles that represent the written language. There's often confetti for celebration. There's sweets. There's candies. There's cookies. There's all kinds of things. And the sweets are meant to make sure that our prayers are sent sweetly to the ears of the spirits. And so it's really, it can be really, really magical to have all those ingredients. You know, in Peru, as Renee mentioned, in Peru, and I'm most familiar with these in Cusco, and I have seen some of them in Lima, but there's actually stores in the marketplace that have all of the ingredients and or the kits. And those kits make it so that in most cases, you don't really have to have much more than the kit. The only things they don't really include are things like the perishable items, which are flowers, or the liquid items like the white wine and the red wine or pisco they often use. And those are not included, along with the leaves are not included. And even there, where we're talking about normally they would use coca leaves because that's their sacred. That's their sacred medicine in so many ways. And so the coca leaves are used. But truly, any leaf that is on your land that you're connected with, bay leaves we often use here because coca leaves can actually be hard to get. You know, we use all different kinds of things that are just what we have. So it's like we want to really honor the energy of the ancients and what they did, but we also have to recognize that even the Pacos in Peru that do these ceremonies recognize that our world is different. And so they understand that we have to take this to a contemporary level. So does that answer the question, Renee? Hello?
Hello. I put myself on mute.
Oh. Did I lose you?
No, I'm sitting right here, me and
okay.
Sashi. She likes listening to these calls.
Cool.
I don't know if anyone saw the picture, but she likes to sit on my lap while we do this call. So do you do it by yourself, or do you get together with friends, or does it matter, or what's the best way?
I think all of the above would be the answer. Group despachos are absolutely wonderful because you're not only connecting to your intent, but the intent of the group. And, of course, as we all know, there's really magic in groups. So groups are really very special. In most cases in Peru, you know, the despacho is actually one of the primary healing modalities in Peru. So oftentimes a personal despacho will be to help you become in alignment or resonance with particular energies, or it will allow you to release energies that are not serving you. You know, if you've got some negativity going on in your life, you might be doing a kuti despacho, which is to really dispel negative energy. You might do an Aini despacho. You would do an Aini despacho after that as well to bring things back into harmony. But there's so many different despachos. You know, when I teach this, you know, as I said, there's 200 to 300 different types of despachos, and I think probably new ones made up daily, because what I have found when I've experienced these with the Pacos in Peru is that no one ever does them exactly the same. You know, they are different every time, and every Paco has their way of expressing and engaging with the spirits. So when you do one with a Paco, with someone who's doing it to assist you in your process and your journey, that's really more about coming into alignment, about releasing energies and coming into alignment. Now, as far as doing them for yourself, once you understand the basic dynamic, really a despacho can be utilized at any time. you know, it can be utilized in, you know, in the moment to help you in whatever process you're going through. And you don't need a PACO to do it once you understand how to do it, or, you know, the basic principles of doing it. And so you can do it for yourself. You can do it with a practitioner. You can do it with a group. And you can also do them for clients. And sometimes, you know, myself, one of my favorite despachos that's part of the course that I teach is the unwinding despacho, because it's important sometimes that we have symbology that allows us to unwind the energies that we've been working on. And this is one of the despachos that I think is one of the simplest, purest, and easiest, because it's so it really basically only has a couple ingredients. You can do it on a small piece of paper. You can do it on a napkin. You basically have a shell. You have sugar. You have white petals from carnations or a flower. And you basically just do those prayers on those petals counterclockwise. And then you wrap it up and you give it to the fire, or you give it to water, or you bury it.
And what would I do that for?
Basically, what you're doing when you're releasing the energies is you're releasing those energies so that the spirits can assist you in whatever you've been asking for. So whether the longest miqui, which it means to eat, the longest miqui is the earth. The earth takes the longest to eat those ingredients, and you want to be very aware of the environment, so you want everything to be biodegradable when you do that. So you want to use paper that's like rice paper. When you do it in the water, same thing, you want to be very conscious of the environment, but sometimes we want to release it back to the waters because the waters are part of what's going to help us. It's part of our process, and or it's what's available, which is sometimes possible. And there's some despachos that it's more preferred that you put them in water, or you burn them, and that is the quickest miqui of the energy, because basically the smoke that is going up from that fire is actually literally going directly, the symbology is that it's going directly to spirit, and it goes quickly, especially if you get a good hot fire, which when you're burning despachos is pretty necessary.
Right. So if I was going to go to Peru, is that something that I would want to include on my trip, was to find myself a PACO or a healer or somebody to do a despacho for me? I mean, do they work better in Peru?
I don't know that they work better in Peru, but I would definitely, if you were in Peru, I mean, I don't think I've ever been to Peru that I haven't done a ceremony with a PACO or a healer. And I would definitely do that as a piece of my experience and learning and gathering knowledge. I would definitely do that. And what most of us don't realize is that I remember I was with Jose Luis at one point when we were listening to the PACOs talk about their processes and ceremonies and how they do their healings. And really, the majority of them use the despacho as the means for engaging with the energies, releasing, and helping with alignment, whatever needs to be done. That's why there's so many of them, is because there's literally a despacho. I guess you could really say it's like everything else. There's literally a despacho for everything. You know, whether it's an Aini despacho building balance and reciprocity and harmony, it's a Kuti despacho for releasing energy, Pachamama despacho for really engaging with the energies of the earth. And, you know, they have in Peru in August, they consider August is really their new year. And in their new year, they do huge ceremonies to Pachamama, to Mother Earth. And, you know, lots of despachos are done. And it's all part of that engagement, because it's really remembering the fact that you're using elements that represent those spirits. That, you know, they're a very the Andean. You know, life is hard in the Andes, so they're always engaging with spirit. They're always, you know, in the high mountains, they're always wanting to, you know, assure that their livestock is going to be healthy for the year. They want to make sure that the harvest of their potatoes and the high mountain agriculture is good. You know, they need the appropriate amount of rain. You know, so they're engaging with the spirits in a very animistic way, you know, where it's like, okay, we give to you, please give back to us. It's that reciprocity and aini. So, yeah, I would say it's absolutely one of the things in going to Peru would be, you know, just such an important piece of a trip.
And also, this is a supposedly an instrumental year, this 2012.
Right.
Is there a 2012 despacho or something special that is about this Pachacuti or this uprising of this calendar? Or how does that fit into the prophecy at all of their...
I don't know that I've ever heard that there's a specific despacho for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be just I haven't heard it. But I would say that that energy would be really, in a way, I think I would think of that maybe as a star despacho because you're engaging with the cosmic energies. I think that what, if I were going and really engaging in that energy for 2012, I would want to be doing something that would bring everything together in harmony. So it might be a chasca, which is a star despacho. It might be an Aini despacho. It may just be that you're doing a Hatun despacho, which in Peru is a expanded. It's always bigger. It's like the kits for the Hatun despachos are, you know, 2 to 3 times bigger than what we would call a regular or a small despacho. So it's more ingredients. It's more sweets. It's more beautiful, you know. So I would be bringing all of those energies of the stars and the moon and all of the energies because really what we're talking about is birthing into a new awareness, and I would want to engage with all of those elements of awareness.
So why would somebody do a star despacho anyway?
Because the star despacho is not a despacho that's done a lot in Peru. It's when there's an intention to engage. It's almost like engage otherworldly energies. It's like bringing those cosmic energies in. Star despachos are actually mostly done for groups. It's not usually a personal despacho, although it can be. Any of them can be. But it's usually done for groups, and it's when they're wanting to really work with those energies to assist either particular events or a particular village or a particular dynamic. And you're really wanting to bring in more cosmic energies.
So tell me, I know you're a really consummate healer and you use all different kinds of practices. What is this, a tracking device, a despacho, or is it a energy mover, or how do you relate it to, say, some of your other healing practices?
Well, you know, I guess I wouldn't call it a tracking device.
Okay.
I would say that it's more about shifting energy. It's really more about the energy of the engagement on a very cosmic level of really, you know, engaging so thoroughly with all the things. I mean, it's really an acknowledgement of things as well as the prayers of release. So, you know, let's just say, for instance, that you might be talking about someone's coming and they have a disharmony in their belly, okay? You might use an Aini despacho or you could use a health despacho. And if you're doing that, once you do that, once you're engaging with the energies of really putting in that you want, when you say your prayers into the Kintus or any of the elements, because you say prayers to all of the elements as you're doing it, when you say those prayers, you're basically saying what I'm, you know, what I'm engaging with here is really asking for, and then, you know, it would be health. It would be, you know, a release of any disruptive pattern. It would be, you know, really engaging with that. Once that's done, and this is the part that you might call a tracking piece, once that is done, once the despacho's complete and it's folded up and tied up, you literally then take it and you literally bless the entire, the person who you're doing for it, you bless their entire body. And so you rub it on their body, and as you are rubbing it on their body, what you're really doing is you're cleansing their field. And when you're cleansing their field, you're also taking energy out. So, for instance, if I'm doing that with a client, I basically, as I'm taking that over their body, from the head to the shoulders, down to the heart, to the belly, you know, down through the legs and the feet, and you do it front and back, you are, in fact, tracking, because you're actually tracking to remove that energy that they're feeling is disrupted in their system.
And what level are you removing it at, Stevie? Are the which body is it? I mean, there's several layers of a person.
That's right, absolutely. Well, from my perspective, it's always, you know, where we're always really starting is the energetic, but we're engaging with the physical. So my experience has been is it does remove it not only from the energetic, but it removes it often from the physical.
Wow. So if I was just starting out and I thought, well, this sounds like an interesting process, you know, how could I go about it at home to get myself ready? What would I do?
Well, first of all, I suppose, you know, for me, and I, you know, I have to admit I'm a person who likes information. So, you know, I wrote a book, literally, which is part of the course that I teach, that really talks about all the ingredients, and it talks about, you know, how they're used, what their representation and symbology is. It tells you actually how to, you know, fold it up, all of that. All of that's really important, and I suppose for me when you asked that question, Renee, it was always important for me to have that information as a foundation for really truly stepping into the process. But
so can people buy your book?
They can. Actually, I've never really sold it. That's a funny question because I've never really sold it.
You own a store.
I know. I've never really sold it as just the book.
Right.
I've always sold it as part of the course.
Okay.
And so, you know, and what I have done is sold it as a self-study course, which means that they don't take the actual class. They're really kind of on their own to really learn it.
Okay.
And so that is possible. And the other thing is that I would offer is, you know, as I was saying, if you're talking about getting started, one of the things that's really simple is the unwinding despacho. And what I would certainly offer for your group is if you would like, I'll send you a file with that, and everybody can have that file. It's a really simple one to do. It's one that I give to clients even if they're not in, you know, not doing shamanic work or into the healing arts. You know, it's a very easy one for them to do, and I'd be happy to give that because that is a really easy way to start.
I think that would be great. I would love to have that for sure. I probably could like to unwind this cold I have going on. Would it work for that?
Absolutely. So, you know, when I say that, so this one's so simple because as a starting despacho, as a way of really just starting out and just doing one for the first time, you know, this is a really simple one because you're basically just opening space, you're just using some simple ingredients, and you're basically unwinding anything that doesn't serve you. And then you can do, as I said, you could put it in water, you can bury it, or you can put it in a fire.
You know, we forget, you know, a few years ago, I thought, you know, before I realized that I was the one keeping myself separate from the community or my family about being a shaman, I did one with my family. I thought, well, you know, let me try it out. And so I did it with my nieces and nephews and my brother-in-law and my sister and my mother before school started 1 year. And I had them put in everything, you know, that they wanted for that year. And about, I don't know, 6 months later, all of a sudden my phone rings and it's my brother-in-law saying, "Did I ever tell you what I thought about that despacho thing?" And I'm there like, uh-oh, here we go now. And what he said was, "Absolutely everything we put in there for prayers came true, Renee." He says, "You know, I got a new job and the kids are all doing great in school." I mean, I thought it was like such an eye-opening experience for me that I could engage this process as a family and that, you know, move it to the energetic of the relationship that was just growing at that time, growing back again at that time, and to see it, how it bloomed and brought my family together was really such a gift.
Yeah, it really, they truly are. And, you know, when you're talking about, once again, just starting and introducing people, you know, part of what I say to people, which demystifies it, is I just say, you know, this is really just a prayer bundle. This is just a prayer bundle. We say it's a despacho. It has a lot of mythology around it. It has a lot of symbology. But the truth of it is it's just a prayer bundle.
So do you know what the Spanish did to their prayers? I mean, I know that in the despachos in the market, just in case they all have hosts in them, you know, the Catholic.
They do. I mean, it's really amazing how, you know, well, what happened was, from my understanding, is that the Spanish really discouraged what they considered more primitive or pagan practices. But the despacho was never really, I mean, it was like it never really got, really pushed completely underneath so that it wasn't available, because it's just what they did in their villages. They did it for themselves. They did it when somebody was sick. They did it, you know, they just kept doing it, and it was part of their practices. So it didn't really get completely annihilated like so many of the practices did. But in the process of them getting anglicized or Christianized, however you want to look at that, then they did put elements in them. What's really interesting is that in most cases, most of the Pacos that I work with don't always put in that host wafer.
Or the cross.
It's always in the kit, but it's not always used.
Well, what I understood it, and I don't know if you've heard it this way, because there's so much lore and so much story, was that that when the Spanish came into Peru, you know, the Peruvians there were like, "More God, this is great," you know,
not true.
Less God. So if you even go to the churches, and this is a little bit off of the despacho track, but I think when Jose Luis used to show us in the churches that you would see the people in the drawings that they would incorporate their own mythology into the paintings and the murals. So if you look closely, you'll see, you know, the Pacos chewing cocoa leaves in the paintings on the ceilings.
Well, actually, the Incans really, I think that comes from the overall Incan mentality and the way they dealt with things, because really the Inca were all, even though they conquered villages as well, when they went into a village, they did not ask the village to just follow them. What they did was they asked the village to incorporate them. So it wasn't about trying to take away something from them. It was always about trying to add something to the village. So in the same way, yes, they did look at the Spanish in the same way when the Spanish first arrived. When the Spanish first arrived, it was about, wow, we've got, I mean, you can imagine backlit horses and riders coming in, and they just thought it was God arriving. So they really looked at it that way, and then of course that did not bear to be true. And unfortunately, you know, much of the culture was just completely decimated. But the people still, you know, one of the things about the people that I've met in Peru that I think is so amazing is they hold such amazing willingness to embrace things. they're not a resistant people. They are more inclusive versus exclusive. And so they tend to embrace things. They've embraced the Western world tremendously since we've been going there as travelers. And I'm not sure sometimes that I think that's the best thing, but we've learned tremendous things from them, and they've learned things from us.
I think that's true. In fact, I used to say that, you know, I my earlier trainings in some of the more American Native traditions were pretty exclusive, but when I went to Peru, it was like, no, here we offer with welcome arms to you our information.
Right.
And I always felt that warmth. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about despachos. Can I change the subject here a little bit?
Absolutely.
Before we do that, and we'll talk about this, Stevie's going to have a despacho class coming up. But Stevie also has the Shaman Store. And one of the things that Stevie also knows a lot about are the textiles and weavings.
Mm-hmm.
And can we talk a little bit about that? Or I didn't prepare you for that, but
you did, but I'll do my best.
Okay. So Stevie, you've done a lot of traveling in Peru to learn about the weavings, and how does this all play into their mythology and their cosmology and what somebody would expect when they go to Peru?
Well, the weavings are always, in essence, they're stories on some level. There are villages that are more graphic with their stories and weave more symbology and icons into their textiles. But basically, each element of the textile, in most cases, represent a particular aspect. So there are images of mountains, and there's images of water, and there's images of the fields, and they're basically weaving in the mythology and the stories and the energies. One of the traditions that especially the Caro have had is that when a child is being ready to be born, is they weave a cloth that is basically the foundation energy that the child is received in. So that child has a mesa, mastana, that it is actually brought into the world with. And in the old days, I don't think it's happened quite as much, but in the old days, that was a tradition that the mother, the grandmothers would weave these cloths for these children to be brought into, and to be brought into the traditions, to be brought into the cosmology, and to be accepted with a foundation that had been woven with love and awareness. So that it's really interesting because the Caro weaving traditions are more simplistic. When you get to Chinchero you're right, you didn't prepare me for this.
I'm sorry, it's okay.
No, Pitamarca and a couple of the other I can't remember the pronunciation, but anyway, they have a tendency to weave more specific symbols. The Caro have a tendency to, they're more abstract symbols sometimes, and so some of them are much more elaborate. The other thing is that based on the traditions of the village, you will find that there is a real difference between how, for instance, Chawatiri, which was what I was trying to think of and couldn't think of. Chawatiri textiles have lots of symbology, and they're very finely woven. All of their threads, their weaving threads, are natural. They're all naturally dyed. When you go to, for instance, Chinchero, you can actually go to the weaving, the textile cooperative that they have there, and you can see them do it. You can actually, on my website, you can actually see there is a picture of them weaving in the yard where they weave, and then there's also a picture at one point of them dyeing the wool, and they use both llama, alpaca. They use llama, alpaca, and they also do use sheep as well. So it really is dependent on the area, and like really in the Cusco Sacred Valley area where you find a lot of the chinchero, the caro, the chawatiri, those textiles tend to have more similarities. When you get down to the Aymara in Lake Titicaca, they're very different. And the way you notice those as being different is they're more linear. They don't have as much symbology in them, and they're more colorful. So
how much would people, what is a reasonable, if you were going to want to bring back a really nice piece of woven fabric or something, is there a price range on something that's really notable or worthwhile? Or,
varying
degrees.
Yeah, there's really a varying degrees. One of the things is that you're going to find that, for instance, some of the newer textiles, let's just use caro as an example. Some of the newer textiles are not woven with natural fibers all the time. They're not naturally dyed. And so those are going to be less expensive. I would say probably, in a range of maybe $75 to $100 sometimes.
Right.
But if you find a beautiful old caro piece, you're going to pay upwards to a couple hundred dollars. And they've gotten more expensive. I mean, when I was first going, back in early 2000, it was really different. And now they're much more expensive than they were. For a, let's just say you're looking at a chinchero or a chawatiri, again, those are going to be more. They're going to be more like maybe 100, maybe 150. In there. And, so for instance, when we went to one of the last trips I took, a friend of mine was with me, and he decided he wanted one of the women in Chinchero to weave him a absolutely gorgeous poncho that was very colorful. And I think he paid $600 for it.
And it was probably well worth every single penny of it.
It was because, first of all, he's very tall, so they wove it to the appropriate length. They did a lot, and then they shipped it to him. And I think that $600 included the shipping. But they basically, these cooperatives have been, one of the women that I deal with there is Nilda, who actually is the founder of the Textile Museum in Cusco. And Nilda is from Chinchero, and so she basically, really has brought all these weaving traditions into one place at the Textile Museum in Cusco, which is one of the places you have to go.
Yeah, that's that's centrally located.
You have to go there, because they're actually sitting there. The men and the women are actually sitting there weaving, so you can see them actually doing the process. And so all of these are pieces, and the way these weave into despachos, so I'm going to go back for just a second, Renee.
That's fine. I knew we'd get it back to despachos.
Yeah, because one of the ways that the textiles are interwoven with the despachos is, even though you do the despacho on a piece of paper, for instance, there beneath that is the foundation of the mythology. So you always have, in most cases, not always, you always have a mastana or a unkuna, which is a smaller version of a mastana, underneath the paper. And again, the representation of that is the fact that it is then that despacho is being built on the foundation of that mythology. So it actually is an important piece. And when you wrap it up and you're cleansing the field with it, you're actually using that mythology to assist you with that as well.
And we so forget we being Americans, I know I'm American, but there's people from all over the world here, is that we've lost that foundational root.
Correct.
And so this is so key to even weave back your own foundation, like I said, with my family.
Right.
In a practice that's ceremonial instead of trite.
Right. I have invited people to do ceremony with gazpacho that had no idea what, I mean, literally they did exactly what Renee said, which is they said, oh, we thought you said gazpacho, that we were doing gazpacho.
We thought we were coming over for soup.
You thought we were coming over for soup. And so it was like, no, we're doing gazpacho. And really, they found it magical, even though, whenever I do it, and I'm doing it for a group in particular, I can't help myself but teach while I'm doing it. So I'm always, when I'm doing it with a group, I'm always being very inclusive. Even if they don't know the prayers, I just say, just put in your best intentions, you know, into that sugar, into that wafer, into that candy. And it really, what it does is it does, again, bring that connection. And so it is really beautiful. And I never hesitate to invite somebody who knows nothing about it.
And so tell us about, you've got some classes coming up. Let's hear about some of your classes.
Well, I've really just got one scheduled right at the moment, and that class is actually the gazpacho class, and that class is a teleclass, which I know that people often think, wow, a teleclass for a gazpacho class. But what's really cool about it is what I've learned to do is I've learned to do the telecourses whereby we have a PowerPoint presentation that is on the computer. So not only are we connected by the phone, just like we are right now, but we also have a PowerPoint presentation where you can literally see the ingredients and understand what each one is. In addition to that, I also we do two gazpachos together while we're on the phone. So the way these classes are worked is that it's like a Thursday evening, for 2.5 to 3 hours. And so we go over, the first class is actually going over ingredients, going over the book, going over, what we need to learn to build that foundation again. And then the second class is actually doing a gazpacho, usually a full moon gazpacho or a Pachamama gazpacho. It depends on what's going on at the moment. I usually try to gear that towards what's happening at that particular time.
And when is your class going to start?
The class actually starts April 12th.
Okay.
So it's a Thursday. And then the last class is actually focused on doing a contemporary gazpacho, which actually the participants in the class actually determine what the ingredients are going to be for themselves.
So do you mean everyone's doing their own gazpachos while you're doing yours? Is that how that goes?
Yep, that's right. So I actually guide everyone through the process as we're doing it. So I'm doing one, and they're all doing one, so they actually get two kits. They get the book, the manual, that has 13 different gazpachos in it, gazpacho recipes, and then all of the background information is also in the manual. So they get the gazpacho kits, and then we do it together so that if there's any questions, if there's, anything that needs to be clarified, we can actually do that as we're working with these two different gazpachos. They're done on different days. So it's actually, it's really interesting because I've had feedback from them that some of the gazpachos have been some of the most powerful gazpachos that some people have ever experienced, and some of those people were extremely experienced practitioners.
How great is that?
Yeah, so it actually works really beautifully.
So if people want to learn more about that, it's on your website?
It is. Go onto the website and go to workshops, and it's listed there. It's actually a phenomenal experience of community, really, even just with just doing the class together this way.
How great is that? So your website again is what?
www.shamans.com.
Okay, and then I'm going to close the call in a second, and then we'll open it up for some questions because I'm sure there could be a lot of questions about the subject or not. You've done a good, thorough job. And if you want to know, I will be taking a group to Peru on a trip called Magic Mountains and Mysteries September 27th. And last year we had a couple of gazpacho ceremonies, and also people had a chance to have an individual healing session with a shaman where they always use the gazpacho as part of it. So my website is practicalshamantravel, or thepracticalshaman.com. And also for advanced people, or advanced students, or advanced fellow travelers, we're taking a trip to Mexico to work with medicine, work with Maria Teresa, and we're going to also be working with a peyote shaman that they're very familiar with there. So that information also is at Practical Shaman Travel. I think that's my advertisement for today. And then also, don't forget that my book is now available. All right, we're going to close the call and open it up for questions. Hold on one second.